Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald from GHI, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
Are you a skeptic? Don't believe in ghosts or the paranormal? Are you divided by the true, by the true, by the true? Welcome to the Paranormal Divide with host Kurt Smith.
Hi everyone, how's it going? It's June 30th. We're going to have a great show tonight. We have Marla Brooks in, haunt writer, and host of the Stirring the Cauldron show Thursday nights at, I forget what, 9 p.m.? If I'm wrong, she can correct it. I just spent a long day at work, so let's bring our guest in, and if I'm wrong, she can correct me and scold me later on or something. I apologize. Marla, how you doing tonight?
I'm biting my tongue, thank you.
I forgot what time your show is on. I apologize.
Don't apologize. 9 p.m. Eastern.
Well, why don't you give a quick introduction about yourself and let everyone know what's in the mix going for Marla?
I hate doing that. you were supposed to do that.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, let me put you on the spot.
It's down in my email. I apologize. I did have a bio, but it's been a long day. I had a blonde moment.
Uh-oh. That's not good. Okay, well, as everybody should know, or no, they shouldn't actually, I've got a series of books called Ghosts of Hollywood. Book one, The Show Still Goes On, came out in February. Book two is coming out in September. Book three right after the first of the year. So I've been busy doing all that stuff, lurking around Hollywood, doing investigations and stuff, and basically that's been my life lately.
Woohoo! So you sound like you're very busy these days with the books and paranormal investigating,
and the show.
Your show. So mm-hmm. do you have any interesting guests coming up on your show soon?
I do. I do actually. I've got Kenny Kingston coming up on the 10th.
He's a great guest.
I've got David Wells and Kieran O'Keefe on separate Sunday shows. We're doing Sunday broadcasts with them. Kieran's going to be on the 13th and David on the 27th.
Sweet. Now, for everyone out there, everyone I'm sure knows who David Wells is, but Kieran O'Keefe, who's Kieran O'Keefe if they don't know who he is?
If they watch Most Haunted, Kieran is the parapsychologist on Most Haunted.
Okay. So he's going to be on a show on Sunday. Do you know what Sunday, so you can plug it?
He's going to be on the 13th, and it's 3 o'clock Eastern time. And David is going to be on the 27th, also at 3 o'clock Eastern.
Awesome.
So yeah, the British invasion is coming to Para X.
The bloody British. I don't have a good British accent. I apologize. I probably destroyed it.
But I think they're still coming. Don't worry about it.
Cool. So let's have some fun tonight. Well, let's just
yeah.
What we're gonna do is before we get into I have Marla's first book. I've been able to read a little bit, Ghost of Hollywood. The show still goes on. But let's talk about some of your paranormal background. Let's first go. What got you into the paranormal?
I think I was kind of born into it. Like I've said before, as far as the witchy side goes. My great-grandmother was a witch, and they called her the village witch, and I've said this before too, but it's better to be the village witch than the village idiot. And so, I mean, it was just kind of like a paranormal household. Everybody believed in ghosts. Everybody talked freely about it. I had experiences when I was a very little kid in the house.
What kind of experiences did you have?
Well, for a while, the bed would wake me up every morning. Like at 6 in the morning, the bed would start shaking. And I know this is California, and I know that we have a lot of earthquakes. But that was, you know, really strange. And we lived in this duplex, and my friend Jen, or Jigs, who's in the chat room right now, she lived on the other side of the duplex. And to get from the living room to the bedrooms in the back, there was a very long hall. And we could always tell where each other was in the house because we could hear each other running down the hallways. You know, we knew when we were going back there. She said her house on that end was a little bit spooky too. So, and it just seems like every house that I've lived in has activity, and I'm not sure it's the house that has activity or maybe things are coming with me. You know, it's just kind of one of those things. So it's just kind of this, it was kind of like a birthright to be into the paranormal.
Now, when the bed was shaking, did it scare the shit out of you?
I was that little, and I was probably in diapers, so it was okay if it did. But I mean, I just thought it was really strange, you know? I mean, because it really, really, really would shake, and it would shake every day. And, you know, I thought there was just something not right about this. But then, you know, talking to the family and everybody, well, it's okay. It's just, you know, something in the room with you. Don't worry about it. So, yeah.
Tom in the chat room, he wants to know, does Marla do paranormal investigations?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. In all my books, there are several paranormal investigations. In each one, I've got a team. I've got my own team. How's that? Victoria Gross and Barry Conrad and Mr. Manson himself, Scott Michaels. And, in fact, we've got a great one coming up on the 21st. We're going to spend the night at the very haunted Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. And it's in a room that they don't talk about being haunted. You know, the Roosevelt has a reputation for Marilyn Monroe's mirror and Montgomery Clift, you know, shooting his bugle back and forth down the hall on the 8th floor. But this is a haunted cabana that they have. And apparently the ghost that's in there presents himself with his throat slit.
Holy. The actual apparition would show up with his throat slashed?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Nearly Headless Nick in Harry Potter in a way. And they've had guests run and check out in the middle of the night. They've been so frightened about it. And they've had several employees quit because of it. So, yeah, like an idiot, we're going. And I think my team is going to back out probably around midnight or so, and I think it's going to be me and the ghost. So that should be interesting.
Now, will your team be the first team that to investigate that?
Yes.
That claim of paranormal activity at the hotel?
Yep. Nobody knows about it. Nobody. They're not talking about it at all. And so, yeah, we're you guys are hearing a first because this is a big secret that I just blew. But that's fine.
Tom also wants to know a follow up. Is the investigation going to be live on Para-X Radio?
Well, this is going to be the thing. Scott informs me, because he's the one that has the inside person at the Roosevelt, that nothing can be broadcast from there. So I'm not sure we can do that, but I do intend to have my cell phone with me, so I'm good for updates throughout the 24 hours.
Well, folks, just to let everyone know, I have a show on Monday night, so I just, you know, sometime during my show, we can call Marla and see how the investigation's going, if everyone's cool with that. If you're cool with that too, Marla.
Oh, I'm fine with that. Fine with that. And maybe we can just sneak in a PC and I can bribe Scott into letting us just do a little bit of a live feed here and there.
I don't think
he may not be there the whole time. We could do it when he's not there.
True. Like at midnight.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Yeah, when I'm sitting there at midnight biting my nails because I'm all alone and waiting for a ghost with a slit throat to show up, yeah, then we can do it. I'm going to need company.
Now, Michael Locke, I guess you know Michael from the chat room. You might know him personally, too. He wants to know what is Marla's day job?
For the last year, it's been writing books and doing this stuff. That's what I've been up to.
Now, of all the places that you've been on a investigation, what's the spookiest place you've ever been?
Scotty's not even here to hear that. Hear you say that word.
I promise I get a plug in for him.
Spooky, in many ways, was the Hollywood Wax Museum, because we had to get in there when they were closed, and they closed at midnight. So starting an investigation at midnight with a place full of dummies wax dummies that has a reputation for being haunted, that was really spooky. It definitely was. Because there's, you know, sometimes your imagination runs a little bit wild and you assume that the eyes are following you here and there, you know. And our psychic, Victoria, picked up on several spirits, and Scott and I were standing in the Chamber of Horrors together, and everybody else was, like, spread out, and we were just looking, I guess, at the Bela Lugosi dummy or something like that, and all of a sudden we heard footsteps go right behind us and keep on walking. And Scott is a bigger baby than I am, and he looked down at me, and I went, yeah, I heard that. And I said, let's go see what it is. He says, I'm not budging from this spot. Wait till the others come.
Do you get scared real easy on investigations?
No, not real easy. I mean, it's a little bit unnerving to get touched, you know.
Have you ever been touched?
Or, huh?
Have you ever been touched on an investigation?
Yeah, I have. And not badly, you know. I mean, somebody will grab my elbow or you know, hit my arm or something like that. And that doesn't really bother me. But, you know, it's just when you hear disembodied footsteps walking right past you, you know, you kind of... makes you wonder, you know, it's one of those scratch your head moments, and did I really imagine it? And then when other people notice it too, it's like, okay, I'm not totally crazy. Mm-hmm.
So the Hollywood Wax Museum sounds pretty interesting. Now, is that in downtown Hollywood? Where is it located for everyone? Just in case they visit Hollywood, they might wonder.
It's on Hollywood Boulevard. It's right smack in the middle of the entertainment district, the tourist district.
Now, and I'm going through your book, you know, your first book that you wrote, Ghost of Hollywood. I pulled up the section of the Wax Museum, and it seems like this is the section where you see a lot, you know, like on The Last Supper. The photographs in this book, were these taken by you?
Yeah.
And looks like there's...
There's orbs in there, Kurt.
Woo, that's what I was getting to. You beat me to it.
There are lots of orbs.
Now, when you take these pictures, could you feel like the energy in the room or if there was a presence...
Sometimes.
In the room.
And sometimes, you know, as you go in to investigate, sometimes you just shoot off the camera. When you particularly feel something, you do, like I just, I'm working on book three now, but Mark Nelson and I went to the L.A. Fire Museum. And we were in the hose bay that the docent was taking us around, and we were in the hose bay, and it was such a tight squeeze in there that the docent was in there, Mark was in there, and his wife Barbara was in there. And I was standing on the outside, and all of a sudden, Mark says, take a picture, look, and he pointed to a spot. And I stuck my head in there, and I took a picture, and you could see an orb right where he pointed, you know, through the viewfinder. I didn't even have to upload it yet. So... yeah, you know, sometimes you do feel it, or somebody else will feel it and let you know. But, you know, you can feel when there's energy in a room. I mean, certain rooms you walk in and they're just completely dead,
true,
while others you walk in and you kind of want to turn around and walk out.
Very true. Even on the investigations I've gone, you know, you can tell. I mean, my spookometer goes up when I'm in a place where I can feel, you know, I'm still learning.
Uh-huh.
I can feel it sometimes, and sometimes I can't, so...
Right.
It's a matter of...
I can feel when somebody's up close to me, and, you know, I think we all react in a different way. With me, I just break out in goosebumps on that one side, wherever they are.
And the back of your hair... The hair on the back of your neck stands up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does, but... I mean, that's... I don't want to say the fun part of investigating, because I guess in some cases it's not necessarily fun. But, you know, and especially when it's verified by other people. Mm-hmm. You know, people are seeing the same thing you're seeing, hearing the same thing. It's not like, you know, mass hysteria or insanity. You know, it's all there. I love it. I would rather investigate than do pretty much else, anything else.
I need to win the lottery so I can investigate up the rest of my life.
I know, wouldn't that be great?
A personal investigation bank account.
Uh-huh, exactly. Our publisher's clearinghouse, maybe they'll come and visit you too.
True, that'd be nice.
I'm still waiting for that.
I haven't registered. I don't register because I don't know. Well, let's go on. Let's go on. Michael has another question in the chat room about your first book. He
uh-huh.
wants to know how many of the ghost stories in the book are personal accounts.
Probably six or seven. Probably six or seven.
Of the
Maybe more. You can run down. You've got the book there. several, you know, several.
Of the personal accounts in the book that you read, what's your favorite one?
Oh, interesting. I mean, you know, they're all good for different reasons. Like, some of them are more scary than others. Those, in fact, I like, in a way. When we did the investigation at Gary Cooper's house, the house where he died, I had this, I walked into this one bedroom, and it wasn't the room where he died, but all of a sudden, I just felt cloaked by something, you know, and it kind of reminded me of those ghouls in the cartoons that float over a person and go, woo, like that. And it was really an uncomfortable feeling, but at the same time, it's kind of exhilarating because you're really feeling something there. And, but then I'm not like, you know, Jason and Grant. I don't provoke. And I just kind of nicely said, okay, I'm leaving right now. I'm going to, you know, be back in a while because obviously that guy didn't want us in there. But, you know, it's also the fun places you go. Like the Wax Museum was really, really, really fun to go and do. And the Formosa Cafe was fun in its own way because we had lots and lots of stories from employees, and some of them were pretty funny.
What kind of stories were they claiming? What type of activity were they claiming at the Formosa Cafe?
Well, at the Formosa, the owner's grandson now runs the place, but this man named Lem Kwan started the place in the 1930s, and he worked there until the day he died.
What was his name again?
Lem Kwan.
Okay, Jimmy, it wasn't Chazo, just to let you know.
Wrong country, but, you know, close. But anyway, Lem apparently had a habit when he was alive of getting his employees that were slacking off to pinch them as he walked by. You know, like, get back, do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the cashiers was there late at night, and she was standing by the cash register, and all of a sudden, he got pinched, and he started running around like a crazy person. Oh, God, Lem pinched me, you know. And stories like that, I mean, you know, they scare the bejesus out of the people they happen to, but by the same token, they're funny as hell to listen to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to experience any of those claims of activity at the Formosa Cafe?
Victoria did. I mean, she walked into the kitchen and she didn't have any idea. We don't tell her where we're going or anything about where we are. And she walked into the kitchen and she said she saw a stocky Asian man spirit in the corner wielding a cleaver.
Holy.
And I asked her to describe him and she did. And when we walked out of there, the Formosa has pictures of celebrities and everything all over the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a picture of Lem that was earlier on in the day. And I walked her over to the picture. I said, was that the man that you saw? And she said, oh my God, yes it was. And she didn't know him, and I didn't know at the time until the grandson told me that Lem was chief cook and bottle washer there. And he thought that this was his kitchen. Mm-hmm. And he was going to take over.
Wow,
and he just didn't want her anywhere near it. So, I mean, in a way, that was kind of fun, too.
That sounds interesting. Were you the only group that has been able to investigate that? Or is there any groups out there like in Hollywood that, you know, who else investigates?
We were really lucky. I mean, I don't know of any groups here in town, but my theory, what I like to do in doing these books, and especially on the investigations, is I like to go to places that nobody has even thought of being haunted before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I make a whole lot of cold calls to places that are just really, like, crazy places, you know. Like Yamashiro Restaurant up in the Hollywood Hills. Nobody ever investigated there before. There was never any word that it was haunted. But when I called and spoke to the general manager, she said, oh, my God, have I got ghost stories for you. Come on up, you know.
Sweet.
And so I think that's the thing, because especially in Hollywood, every place that is supposedly haunted has been talked about already. And I don't want to do that in my books, especially for the personal investigations.
Well, you want to get stuff that's, you know, not known to people. That way, you know, like, hey, Marla knows what she's talking about when she goes in and she does all her research and for your books.
I do lots of research, trust me.
All right, we're gonna take our first break of the day. Folks, you're listening to, and I'll be right back with you, Marla. You're listening to the Parax Radio Network. We'll be right back after this commercial.
Is this thing on? Okay, thank you. All right, people. Settle down. We really have to get started. Now, first, a couple of quick announcements. For those of you who ate at the commissary this morning, the nurse would like to speak to you right after this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
After the meeting, Mrs. Torkelson. Yes, after. Thank you. I also wanted to remind everybody once again that the fountain in the middle of the commons area is not, I repeat, not a toilet. Is that understood, Mr. Kunkelmeyer? Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that many of you have been on the internet listening to some website called ParaX. I find this quite disturbing. I know you have enjoyed shows like Gaps Paranormal Radio with Dave and Tom, Ghostology with Brian and Anna Marie, Crossroads Paranormal with Mike and Chris, Mission City UFO with Mike Cole, Paranormal Awareness with Bill Metz, and the Ghost Divas Live in the past. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, I hear they've got a whole bunch of new shows, like Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith, Warning Radio with Brian and Baxter. That one makes me nervous. Paranormal Help Desk with Jeff Barnes, Ghostly Talk with Doug and Scott, and Ghost Chatter with Jimmy Morris. I loved him when he was with the Doors. That means that every evening, Monday through Sunday, there is a live show with live chat so you can speak directly to the host. And if you happen to miss the live show, they replay all the shows during the day. Plus, ParaX has the shows archived if you're looking for a particular episode that you missed. Now, people, enough is enough already. This has become very disruptive to your normal routine. I mean, with everyone listening to ParaX 24 hours a day, nothing is getting done around here. I mean, poor Mr. Finkelstummer hasn't bathed in weeks, and Mrs. Clapperpot won't even leave the computer to use the bathroom. That reminds me, the chairs in room 24 are going to be burned, so don't be using them. Mm-mm. Now, we really have to do something about this. So...
Excuse me, sir, but that episode of Caps Paranormal Radio that you like, it's on right now.
Really? Right now? We'll talk about this later. Meeting is adjourned. Somebody put Mrs. Clapperpot's chair in room 24, please. Get out of my way. Not the fountain, Mr. Kunkelmeyer!
Alrighty, you're listening to the Paranormal Divide on ParaX Radio Network. We have guest tonight, haunt writer Marla Brooks. Hi, are you still there, Marla?
I am.
Alrighty, I think before the break we were talking about research. Now, when you go into writing a book, how much research do you do, and how long does it take for, you know, like, let's say your first book that you wrote, Ghosts of Hollywood, how long did it take you to do all your research before you actually started writing?
Well, it's kind of a back and forth thing, because I will do research on a place beforehand, and then when I'm done, we usually come back with other things. Like, for example, when we did a haunted bank building basement, and the Hollywood Highland, everybody knows that location. And our medium picked up on an entity there, and she gave me the name, and she told me a little bit about him. And I can't take everything at face value, so the next day I sat down and tried to research, because she said this guy had mafia ties or whatever. And I put the name in Google, and I started looking, and, you know, it took a while to dig it out, but she was right. And the Don, is that the right word? Should ask the ghost mafia.
The Don
was a man named Frank, which is the name that she picked up, and he was the Don during the period that she picked up that he was there. So, you know, there's always research that comes in after the fact, too. But it takes, you know, it takes weeks to sometimes to get all the stuff, because I also like to grab out things, even about a well-known location, that maybe are little-known facts, things that people don't know, just to kind of add some color to it. So it's really, really research-intensive.
On the average, how long would you say it takes? Maybe a year, 6 months?
Well, you know, I think the first book took me nearly a year. And, again, a lot of that was just research. And then, of course, you know, it takes a long time to sometimes line up investigations, especially because we're doing public places.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes a while to get those lined up, and that's a bunch of hurry up and wait time, and then that's the time you do the research on your other stuff, you know.
Cool. Now, you had mentioned that you were talking to it. What's your opinion on psychics in the paranormal field?
I think they're helpful, I'm really tough on psychics. I don't, you know, I think most of them aren't worth their salt. But I think that you don't go into an investigation with just a psychic, and that makes the investigation. You have to be scientific as well, and there's the fine line between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use one in conjunction with the other, and I think a psychic is really good to kind of point you in the right direction. Well, I feel activity over here, or something's going on over there. Then you bring in the EMF meters and the thermal imaging hammers and all that to kind of cooperate, you know, each other.
So
I think there's a place for them. Yeah.
When you use a psychic on your investigations, do you give them try to test them out to see if you can trick them or something, just to see if, you know, are they hitting a high accuracy rate? Because, you know, do you want a psychic out there that can't hit anything and just blowing shit out their ass?
Exactly. I mean, you know, I've known Victoria for quite a while, and I trust her implicitly as a psychic. I don't just grab anybody off the street and say, hey, you want to be part of my team tonight and, you know, be a psychic on my team. So there are people that I know and trust in that area because, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked. They've proven to me their worth, you know, that they are good or whatever. Because, you know, my reputation's at stake, too. If I get some hack with me, I'm in trouble, too.
And you don't want a bad reputation out there because, you know, there seems like there's a lot of bad groups out there getting a bad name right now for doing stuff
exactly.
They're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be one of them.
Now, I have to ask this question, unfortunately, and and it's not the giblet gravy question, but we were talking about orbs earlier, but let's get Marla's personal opinion on orbs. And no, Mike, they're not covered in giblet gravy either.
Oh, thank God. For the record, I'm really careful when I decide something in my mind is an orb, because I don't believe that they're like, you know, a spirit that's going to form or something, but I do believe they're a form of energy, that I will say, a true orb. You know, that's not discounting dust and spiders and you know, flying insects and all that. So I'm not like one of those that's, orbs, you know, there's no such thing. I think they are energy, and I think, you know, especially the ones that you can see with the naked eye,
mm-hmm.
you know, the ones you get on film is something else. But when you see them with the naked eye, you kind of sit there and scratch your head and say, yeah, I just really actually did see that.
Have you personally seen
it? As far as putting orb pictures in my books, you know, I kind of leave it for the reader to decide. Mm-hmm. If you think this is an orb, great. You know, this is what I got on the picture. If you believe it, great. If you don't, that's fine, too, because I mean, in any realm of the paranormal, I'm not out to try to change somebody's mind if they're a skeptic, if they don't believe. I'm not going to sit and waste my time trying to convince anybody of anything. And the same thing kind of goes with the orb pictures. You know, this is what I'm presenting you, believe it or not.
Have you personally seen an orb with your own eyes?
I have. It was just crazy. I was with Kenny Kingston at the Greystone Mansion, and I was outside. Because at the time they weren't letting people in. And I was looking into a room, and it was the room where a kind of nasty murder had taken place. And I was standing there, and all of a sudden I saw three orbs just foot, foot, foot. And I looked around. We were in a place where there was no traffic. There were no other people. There was no helicopters, anything in the sky. And they were literally in this dark room, and they just went, poing. And I looked at Kenny, and I said, what was that? You know, and he says, well, I think it was orbs. And I said, oh, okay. Just wanted to make sure. So, yeah, I think I did.
Sweet. That's awesome. Now, we do have another question in our chat room from Michael. He wants to know if you have any daily rituals that you do.
Daily rituals. I try to meditate every day. That's kind of, you know, it's kind of grounding and relaxing and all that stuff. But that's pretty much it, you know. I mean, before we go out on an investigation, you do a little more. You put the protection on. You do the white light thing and all that stuff. But basically, it's just meditating, and that's good for the soul, you know, for anybody.
Okay. Now, I want to get back into your book because I've read some of it, and it's just truly amazing. I like the one I have bookmarked. One section is Haunted Intersections, which interested me. The first one I want to talk about is the Laurel Canyon Boulevard and Lookout Mountain Drive.
Yeah, it's up in the hills, and that one's kind of a traffic hazard for people because people have seen, and correct me if I'm wrong because it's not at the top of my head, but they have seen a carriage come out of nowhere, and they've caused traffic accidents, you know, the image, because in the old days, of course, up in the hills, everybody traveled by carriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they see this carriage with horses pulling it full blast out of nowhere. It causes quite a few traffic accidents. It's a very well-known haunted intersection here.
Do you know if there was any fatalities at that intersection?
No, just a lot of fender benders. Yeah, that's what they say.
Now, also in your book, it seems like Hollywood Boulevard seems like it's some of these intersections, like Hollywood Boulevard and Sierra Bonita Avenue?
Yeah, that's the Indians. You know, some of them I take with a grain of salt. Now, you have to understand that L.A., Native Americans lived in L.A. long before we got here. So there's a lot of Indian lore. But they say at that particular intersection, people see covered wagons.
Mm-hmm.
They see tomahawks flying through the air at various times.
Holy, don't scare the shit out of me.
Do they hear war cries? I mean, I don't know. I personally have not seen that, but...
Have you heard, have you heard any, like, EVPs or seen any photographs or anything? Has anyone presented any evidence?
No. I mean, you know, it would be hard to get an EVP on that street because it's so busy, traffic noise would drown it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not seen any photos of phantom Indians or tomahawks, no.
That would still scare me, a tomahawk flying through there. And people ducking. Well, what are you ducking for?
No, they do.
And then you see the tomahawk flying by?
That's what they say.
That's a pretty interesting intersection. What about Hollywood Boulevard and, if I destroy it, you can correct me, Cahuenga?
Cahuenga.
Cahuenga.
Is that where the...
Something to do with, let's see.
What's his name?
Raymond Chandler Square proposed...
Raymond Chandler, yeah, the author Raymond Chandler. There's Raymond Chandler Square there. They put up a dedication to him. He's the guy that did all those detective novels and everything. And people, again, no photos, no EVP, but they say that they see spirits there every now and again.
And the last intersection on Hollywood and Vine, it seems like I've heard of Hollywood and Vine. It seems like you have quite a bit written about that intersection.
Well, Bela Lugosi used to walk by there on his daily walks after he was Dracula. And they say that Bela Lugosi still walks down Hollywood Boulevard. He still takes his daily constitutional. And there used to be a bus bench there that Lon Chaney used to sit at quite a bit. And people used to see him sitting at that bus bench. And they finally took the bench away, so I don't think he's there anymore. But people still swear they see Bella every so often, just kind of floating by.
Were you able to experience it, or?
No.
No?
You know, I don't know, it's so crowded, and I haven't, you know, you probably have to go there late at night, early in the morning or something when there's nobody around.
Mm-hmm. 3 o'clock
and there's
in the
so
morning.
Many Hollywood lookalikes on the street, you know, you might mistake him for the ghost, you know?
True. Now, we have a couple questions in the chat room. The first one's from Stoner. He's from Ireland, our buddy Stoner. He wants to know, has Marla ever think she took something home with her from an investigation? Like, has something paranormal followed you home?
I did, and I think he's still here. And according to Willie Windwalker and Lisa J. Simpson, he is here. We did that investigation at the bank building. And because I'm so idiotic about getting EVPs and can't get one, right before we left the bank building, I was talking into the microphone and I said, come on, please, you know, kind of throw me a bone, please just say something in here so I don't feel totally inept and blah, 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 you know, it's a joke, and I left. when we got home, a couple of us were standing out in front of the house, and I started hearing talking. And I thought, well, that's odd. Coming from my purse, I figured out. And apparently my digital voice recorder cued itself back to me saying, oh, come on, throw me a bone, blah, blah, blah. Now, I know I had not only rewound it, but I turned it off. So I started to laugh in a way, and I said, okay. I said, somebody followed us back to the bank, and they were playing with my DVR. And so I thought I sent him back, but then not too long ago, we saw a black shape zip into my bedroom, and it started upsetting the animals. And when I think it was on Bishop Long's show, and also with Dave and Tom, Willie Windwalker told me that I had an entity attached to me. And I thought, but didn't still put two and two together. And then I talked to Lisa J. Smith, and I said, okay, do you feel anything around me or in the house or something? And she said, yeah, I do. She says, he's a male entity, and his name is Frank.
Is that the one that you're talking about the Don, the mafia
thinking,
dude?
Because that's the only Frank I know, and he did apparently follow us home from the bank at that time. So maybe he just keeps coming back to visit or something. I think I did.
Have you done anything to try to cleanse your house?
Yeah, I have. I flooded it with white light. I was going to sage it, but it would hurt the bird. But I actually went in there the other day and asked him very nicely but firmly to please leave. So far so good.
What do you think works the best when cleansing a home? Do you think just smudging? Because I know I've heard of smudging, which is burning sage. Is that correct?
Yeah, that'll knock you out. That stuff is so strong. But I don't know. I think it depends. You know, it depends on who followed you, who they are. You mm-hmm. know, in spirit. I mean, if it's a nice person, a nice little please leave would work. Sometimes you have to get out the big guns and bring somebody in that can help them cross over if they haven't crossed over, or find out why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, spirits can pop in and out for a variety of reasons.
If
they're just coming in visitation, no big deal. But, you know.
Have you tried to contact the spirit that was there? Did you do any EVP?
I did. I went in there and I said, look, I said, I know you're here. And why are you here? Tell me your name. You know, if you have a message, let me know. You know, talk into this device. Nothing. No. So, mum's the word with him.
Now, talking about, you know, bringing something home in investigation, Stoner also brings up, what do you do to use for protection just so that doesn't happen? Do you do any rituals before?
I do. First of all, I wear a pentagram and a Solomon seal, which is supposedly to keep the negative spirits away. I also call my guides before I go out on an investigation and ask them to keep bad things away, only let through, you know, good spirits. I also talk to the doorkeepers because they're the ones who are supposed to keep them in and out. And then with Victoria, we usually do a prayer before we go into a location and one when we come out so they don't attach themselves to us, but every so often. Think if a spirit is strong enough and has a mind to, they'll bypass the prayers and the protection.
Okay. Well, we're going to take another quick break, everyone. I'll be right back with you. Marla, you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network and the Paranormal Device.
This is Bonnie Vent, the Spirit Advocate, with an important public service announcement. All views and opinions expressed by hosts and guests on the Para-X Radio Network are all Dave's fault. If you'd like to complain about a host or guest, please contact our customer service department and they will be happy to assist you.
Oh, wow. Oh, where you been, man? Hey, man, they trained me up, man. They put me in here, man. I've been looking all over for you, man. Hey, man, we're in a nut house, man. You know where we are, man?
What?
We're in a nut house.
Yeah. Hey, man, they got me chained up, man.
No, he got you chained up.
Now, come on, man. Get me out of here, man.
Shoot with a nut.
Hey, no, get the key, man. Get the key. It's locked up.
It's locked up.
Yeah, get the key.
I gotta get a key.
Yeah.
Hey, this ain't even the doctor, man.
Yeah?
They put me in charge of medication.
Oh, that's heavy.
Hey, I'll be right back, man.
Okay, hurry up.
Don't go away.
Okay, get the key and get me out of here, man. Hurry up, man.
And let's work my thoughts, man!
If you cannot resolve your issue with our customer service team and require a supervisor, please feel free to come to our offices and ask for Dave.
Who is it?
It's me, Dave. Open up, man. I got the stuff.
Who is it?
It's me, Dave, man. Open up. I got the stuff.
Who?
It's Dave, man. Open up. I think the cops saw me come in here.
Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with me.
Who?
Dave, man. Open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave. Come on, man. Open up. I think the cops
saw me. Dave's not here.
No, man. I'm Dave, man. Hey, come on, man.
Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with
Who?
Me. Dave, man, open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave.
Dave's not here.
No, man. I am Dave, man. Will you come? Open up the door, will you? I got the stuff with me. I think the cops saw
me. Where is it?
Oh, what the hell is it? Go. Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E. Will you open up the goddamn door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
This announcement was produced by Genesis Creations Entertainment with a lot of help from Cheech and Chong. Copyright 2008.
Maybe Frank is there, huh?
He could be. Possibly. Frank, are you here? No. So, well, let's get back into your book. I mean, so far we've talked about, and you mentioned the Hollywood Wax Museum. We talked about the haunted intersections. What information can you give the listeners about the Knickerbocker Hotel?
The Knickerbocker Hotel used to be a really big celebrity hangout way in the 20s. Rudolph Valentino used to hang out there. I think Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe had their honeymoon there. And it has quite a bit of activity. They say that they see Marilyn Monroe in the bathroom there, but then in this town, everybody sees Marilyn Monroe everywhere. In fact, I'm going to have Kenny Kingston on my show in a couple of weeks to clear that up. But the chandelier swings, and anybody that goes into the bathrooms, they get touched. They get cold breezes or cold spots in the hotel, but in the past few years, they closed the hotel and turned it into a retirement home. And so we can't go in and investigate it, but it's had lots of stories. And particularly, I mean, that was the hotel where Harry Houdini did his final, well, his wife did her final Houdini seance to try and contact Houdini. Mm-hmm. This was like the 10th year anniversary. And they were up on the roof of the Knickerbocker Hotel, and Houdini did not come through that night, and it was broadcast radio all over the world. But as soon as they blew out the candles and were ready to leave, as rumor has it, a storm broke out, and there was lots of thunder and lightning. And strangely enough, it was only over the roof of the Knickerbocker Hotel. So go figure.
Now, have you had a chance to investigate the Knickerbocker Hotel?
Nope, because as I said, they turned it into a retirement home, and they don't allow people in.
Will it scare the old folks that are in there?
Yeah, there would probably be a few more hauntings in that case.
Were you able to speak to any of the residents of the?
No, you can't even get in. I mean, it's definitely a very closed community right now.
Well, that's a bummer. It seems like it'd be a very interesting place, though, an active place to investigate.
It would be. I think it would be. Yeah. But there are so many places that just say no, you know, for whatever reason. Whether they just don't want bad publicity or they think you're crazy or, you know, they don't want to know, which happens, you know, on occasion.
And you have to respect that. I mean, that's one thing.
Sure.
If you don't respect these places, I think I read a blog today on MySpace where these paranormal teams are going in and doing home invasions and throwing the homeowners out and investigating these houses. When I read that, I was just totally appalled by that.
Those are the ones you want to send the demons after.
I just did. I sent them all to whoever those people are doing it. That's just
good for you.
That floors me. When I read that, I was like, I couldn't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
That's just sad.
Yeah.
What about, let's continue. What about the Avalon, and then in parentheses, it's Palace Theater?
Yeah, it was the Hollywood Palace. I mean, I think that's what you're talking about. No, never mind. That was another one. It's the Avalon Theater. It's a live venue where lots of rock bands play and everything. And they have a whole set of ghosts there. They have couples that are watching shows from long years ago. There's one pair of spirits, apparently a man and a woman, that go chasing themselves and giggling and kind of like, you know, romping around the place. A security guard didn't believe any of this was happening, so he brought his dog in, and the dog started looking towards the kitchen area and barking quite a bit, so he thought, well, okay, I'm going to test this. So he took a saucer and a glass, and he put it on the floor,
mm-hmm.
and he walked out, and he came back about 20 minutes later, and the glass this time was on top of the saucer instead of the other way around. Somebody had switched it on him, and he was the only one there. So there's quite a bit of activity. Now, they did some remodeling, and the people there told me that a couple of the spirits did leave.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they tore out their seats, and they did want to stand and watch what was going on. But, yeah, that's a very active location. We're trying to get over there and do an investigation.
Sounds like you'll have to keep us updated on that one. If you get in, and let us know how that one went, just like when you go to the Roosevelt Hotel.
Oh, you're going to hear from me at the Roosevelt. I'm scared to death sitting there.
Okay, well, let's continue. What about the Paramount Studios and the Hollywood Forever Cemetery connection?
Well, they do have a literal connection in that they share a common wall. And the cemetery just butts right up against Paramount Studios. So the stages, I think it's 32, and 29 and 32 are the most haunted stages at Paramount.
Mm-hmm.
But what I find even more interesting is that, of course, lots of people that have worked at Paramount over the years are buried at Hollywood Forever. And people have seen apparitions of people dressed in 1940s and 50s garb walking through the wall from one lot to the other.
Dang. Wow, that'd be awesome to set up an IR camera to see if you can catch something.
Exactly. I'm trying to do that, too. Yeah.
So in your book, it says, like, Virginia Rapp and Fatty Arbuckle, they say that they're ghost. Clifton Webb, Dietrich.
Yeah, he's supposed to haunt there. I mean, it's a very active one as far as celebrities go, according to lore. I got chased out of a mausoleum there, not by somebody quite that famous, but it was a director named William Desmond Taylor. And he was a murder victim in the 20s. It was like the first Hollywood scandal. And I went in to take a picture of his crypt. He's in the same mausoleum where Rudolph Valentino is.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there. I was by myself. The neat thing about the cemetery is, even though it's very popular and kind of a tourist attraction, you can be in there for hours on end without running into anybody else, which is kind of cool. And I walked over to his crypt, and I was feeling great when I walked in there. And as soon as I put the camera up, I got that, you know, that feeling where you just have to run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the run dude moment.
Dude, run! The Brian exactly. Hornwass situation.
Correct, yeah. But I got that, and I literally did run out of there. And I just think he didn't want his picture taken or something. I don't know. But that was totally freaky to me. Because that's never happened.
That sounds pretty interesting. That'd be cool to go check out again.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I have another question in the chat room. It's from Jimmy. He wants to know, has Marla ever investigated the Queen Mary? And if so, where'd it go? If so, what did she find? What did you find?
I've only been on the Queen Mary once, and it wasn't for any kind of investigation. Like I said, when I'm doing these things, I try to go places that haven't been written a lot about. So that's not one that I've gone to yet, but I would like to. Things that are too overly publicized, and I know this is... Same thing happened with the Winchester House. When Most Haunted went to the Winchester House, I talked to David Wells after they came back.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, it seemed like you did 7 hours on Halloween at Winchester and not a whole lot happened. And he said, no, there wasn't. And he said, the problem with places like the Winchester House and possibly the Queen Mary, although I think it is rather active, is he said that there's so many investigations that the spirits that are there, they just get bored and they don't show up anymore. You know, he's like he said with the Winchester House, he said if they would close that down for a year and then come back, they might get more activity. And I kind of believe that too. So that's why I just still kind of look for places that are off the beaten path and haven't been written about, just something new and different and probably more active.
Now, will there be a lot of new places that's not in the first book, in your second book?
Yeah, we've got some great places in the second book. I mean, we've got the bank building, obviously. We actually went to a library here in town that is very kind of neat. We went to a bar. We actually, the second book is called Talking to Spirits. It's a lot of seance, mostly seances.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we went to an old bar that used to be a celebrity hangout. Now it's kind of a dive bar in a way, but it's got a goth population on the weekends. And we investigated it in book one, and we went back in book two for a seance. And we came up with some really interesting things. And speaking of the Knickerbocker, an actor by the name of Albert Dekker came through to the medium during the seance. And he was an actor who was, I've got to choose my words carefully, he was murdered very badly. The coroner said that it was not a murder, that it was suicide. But this guy was hogtied. He had hypodermic needles in him all over the place. A horse bit in his mouth. It was really, really kind of nasty. But apparently he came through during the seance, and he told us he came through on the guise of helping us clear his name. And what he told us was not only that he wasn't murdered, he told us who the murderer was. He told us that she was still alive and that she lived at the Knickerbocker Hotel.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that was very, very cool, and I'm sorry about the phone, guys.
That's okay. It's a pretty cool ringtone, eh?
I'll put a spell on it.
No more ringing.
No more ringing. See, it worked.
there was another comment from, you said Jigs was your friend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we grew up together.
Jigs wants to know if you picked up 80. Any hitchhikers lately.
Just Frank, I think. Just Frank, I haven't seen anybody else lately, and hope not to. I think, you know, they're okay to visit, but they don't need to follow me home.
Stay away. Stay where you are. Don't follow anyone home.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, let our listeners know when book two will be out, when they'd be able to buy it, where they can buy it, purchase it?
They can get it just about anywhere, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, any major bookstore is carrying it. It should be out, they're telling me September, it could be August, it just depends.
Now, if people want to purchase the book and send it to you for an autograph, would you do that
Absolutely, sure. Although I keep thinking it's so stupid that people want my autograph, you know, but, I mean, it's not they're stupid for asking, just, you know, it's like, who'd want my autograph kind of thing.
It's always
but
cool.
Yes, I will. I'll be happy to.
It's always cool to have a book that's autographed by the author.
I know. I gave you one, didn't I?
Yes. It makes it more of a keepsake and a memento, you know.
Okay.
I can say, hey, like when Tom has his book published, he promised me a signed autograph book.
Mm-hmm.
Of his
good.
Book, which I'm sure we'll all be in. The Trials and Truths, Chapter 3, Para X Radio.
There you go. Well, he asked me to do the introduction, so I'm going to have a little bit of a part in that, too.
Sweet. That's awesome. I saw that your introduction in your first book was by David Wells. Is he going to do the introduction for the second book?
And the third, yes.
That's awesome. That is.
I know. I love him to death. He is so great. Such a good guy.
Well, let's get into one more topic about your first book before we close out our chat tonight. It's about urban legends, Hollywood's ghostly urban legends, if I can speak.
Those two, yeah.
Those two words. Let's talk about the first one. Can let our listeners know about the amusement park mummy.
Oh, the now it's catching on. The New Pike mummy. Out in Long Beach, we have an amusement park that's been around since the 30s and 40s. It's closed down now, but it was called New Pike. And in the Fun House, and I remember going in there, or that Fun House ride, there was this wax dummy that was like painted orange, and it was really nasty looking, and it always gave everybody the creeps. Well, one day they were using the location to film the $6 Million Man.
Uh-huh.
And the mummy, the wax dummy was in the way. So one of the crew picked it up, and its arm fell off. And when its arm fell off, there was a human bone sticking out of it.
Ooh.
So immediately they called the coroner's office, and they came down and kind of chipped away some of the wax, took the body in for an autopsy, and it actually was a human body.
Holy cow.
This was an outlaw that had been murdered in the 1800s, I think in Kansas, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, no, Oklahoma, sorry. And they found in its mouth, in this mummy's mouth, like a ticket stub for a circus that dated back to, you know, 1890 or something, and they found a coin in its mouth, too. And so they went ahead and took the body back to Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
they had it buried, and because apparently this dummy, I mean, this corpse had traveled all over the country as kind of like a sideshow amusement.
Wow.
And a couple of people turned it down because they said it wasn't lifelike enough. I guess after they covered it in wax, you know, it kind of looked that way. So for all these, I mean, it was probably at New Pike for 20 or 30 years, and people that were going through this scary ride had no idea that they were actually, you know, riding past a real corpse.
That's crazy.
It was cool. And in fact, some of the cast from the $6 Million Man crew went to the funeral back in Oklahoma out of respect, paying their respect.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Now, we do have another question from Stoner in our chat room. He wants to know if Marla wrote the book, How to Cook Like a Jewish Grandmother.
Yes, I did. it's a very long story, but yes, I did. That's me. I did that a few years ago.
You wrote a cookbook?
I did. I've written three cookbooks, actually. Two of them were celebrity cookbooks.
Now, is there any recipes for giblet gravy in the cookbooks?
Not a one. Strangely enough, not a one.
No giblet gravy.
No giblet gravy.
I'm disappointed. In your next cookbook, could you have a recipe for giblet gravy, if you do write one?
Not doing another cookbook. Thank you. I just like that. Enough, yeah.
Well, that's cool. A cookbook. That's interesting. I bet you people would never have known that if it wasn't asked tonight.
Thanks to Google and Stoner, yeah.
Stoner
rules. I'm covering my misspent youth or past or something.
Stoner rules.
Yes, he does.
Okay, well, I think we have enough time for one more ghostly urban legend. Let's go through your book here. I have one. Let's talk about, here's a good one. Peg Entwistle haunts the Hollywood sign. Everyone sees the Hollywood sign when they travel to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. And Peg Entwistle was an actress in the 20s who had a tough time making a go of it. And she lived with her uncle down at the base of the Hollywood sign up in Beechwood Canyon. And I guess, you know, her career wasn't going the way she wanted to. And she got very despondent. And one day she told her uncle that she was going to go out and buy a pack of cigarettes or whatever. And instead she climbed all the way up to the Hollywood sign, climbed on the big letter H, and jumped down and killed herself. And they found her body the next morning with a note in it, you know, saying, I just can't take it anymore, whatever. But the interesting thing was that 2 days later, her uncle got a letter in the mail from the Pasadena Playhouse, which was a very prestigious acting venue here.
Uh-huh.
And it was asking her to star in a role in a play. And so, you know, she's like 2 days late. And, you know, if she'd only waited 2 days and not killed herself, it would have worked. And the twist to that story is, the play was about a woman who was contemplating suicide.
Wow.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it's just not good to off yourself.
Do people say that they see her spirit up there, a ghost, apparition?
They do. They hear crying up there quite a bit. The park rangers, the Griffith Park Rangers, mm-hmm. have seen her. They see not a full-blown apparition, but they see a mist that kind of accompanies this kind of wailing, sad noise. She's been spotted, or we assume that it's her, dozens and dozens and dozens of times. Because I think it's that kick thing in the butt that, you know, God, why didn't I wait 2 days, you know, or something like that. Because that will keep the spirit earthbound sometimes. Regret.
Do they allow people up by the Hollywood sign, or is that off limits?
Huh?
Do they allow people up by the Hollywood sign? Do you have to sneak up there, or is that off limits?
No, you can get up there. It's just, it's a major hike, but lots of people do hike up there, because that's the Hollywood Hills, and a lot of hiking trails and stuff. So lots of people do go up to the Hollywood sign.
Okay. Now I have a couple more questions from the chat room. And we can go over a little bit after 9 o'clock tonight, because Spooks Are Us airs tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time with Scotty and Wayne. They are spooky on the Paradise Radio Network. Jigs wants to know, does the LA Zoo have any haunted places?
That's a good question. Jigs, we're going to have to go check it out next time you're in California. Because it's in Griffith Park, there's a likelihood that it might, because that whole area of Griffith Park is quite haunted. It has a curse on it. The niece of the original owner way back when it was still Spanish territory, put a curse on the park, and it's quite haunted throughout. And I think the zoo very well might, unless the animals are scaring it away or something.
Cool. Book four, there you go, in book four.
That's it. Go to the zoo. Yep.
Michael wants to know, and I know there's a podcast available because you had someone on about them. Is there any stories regarding the Manson murders? I know you had a guest on your show.
Right, yeah, Scott Michaels. And yeah, that would be the podcast to check out. But I don't know. I mean, there's a house next door to where the Manson murders took place that is reportedly very haunted. I know Taps has been there, and Chris Fleming has been there, and a lot of people have been there. People claim to hear screaming in the canyon. It's up in Benedict Canyon. But nothing, you know, the house was torn down. Somebody else lives there now, and the people that live on the property where the murders took place say nothing is going on in their house. It seems that the hauntings have moved, you know, next door to the other guy's house. But I've only been by there. I haven't really checked it out.
Well, cool. Well, I've had a great time tonight. I mean, we could go on and on and on. And hopefully down the road, when book two comes out, you'll come back on my show and we can discuss book two.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That'd be fun.
Especially since you behaved yourself tonight, Kurt.
Woohoo! Now, we do have one more question real quick, and I got to get this in for Don. He's from Northern Kentucky Paranormal Investigations. He wants to know if you're going to be attending any paranormal conventions soon, and if so, where?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. I really wish there'd be one out here, because we could get into all kinds of paranormal mischief. But not in the present time, because I'm still fighting the deadline for the next book, and then I think they've got a witchcraft book for me to do. So I'm pretty much sticking to home at the moment.
Cool.
But I would love to.
Well, why don't you go ahead and plug if you have a website, your show, any information, plug
okay.
anyone else's show, say hi to anyone real quick if you want to. The mic is all yours.
My website is www.hauntedwriter.com, and there's a link there also to my MySpace page, which is probably kept up a little bit better than the website. My show, Stirring the Cauldron, here on Para X, is on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. And I've got some really great guests coming up, and I love hearing from you guys in the chat room when the show is on. And otherwise, you know, the book will be out in August, and then book three will be out just after the first of the year, and who knows where we're going from there.
Awesome. Well, if you could hang on the line real quick, I'll be right back with you. I got to play all my good ending stuff. I'd like to personally thank you for coming on my show tonight.
Oh, thank you for asking me. It was fun.
It was. And I'll be right back with you.
Okay.
Alrighty, folks. Well, it's been another great episode of The Paranormal Divide with myself, Kurt Smith, and a great guest tonight, haunt writer Marla Brooks. on the next episode of Paranormal Divide, we do have Jimmy and Gerald from Ghost Chatter who will be on. And coming at the end of the month of July, we do have one of the stars of the Ghost Hunter Internationals, Barry Fitzgerald, will be on. Tentatively, I can tell you all it's either going to be the 21st or the 28th of July. I will keep everyone updated. Once I know, I will be plugging that show big time. So everyone, have a great Monday. Spooks R Us is on in about 57 minutes. They're going to have a great show tonight. And take care, and we'll see you here next week.
This has been a production of the Para-X Radio Network.
You've been listening to The Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith, brought to you by the Beach State Paranormal Society. Be sure to join us next time as we cross into the Paranormal Divide on your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. Any use or rebroadcast of this show without written permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2008.
Hi, this is Marla Brooks from Stirring the Cauldron. Please tune in Monday nights for the Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The odds of a child becoming a professional athlete? 1 in 16,000. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. You know the odds of autism. Now learn the signs. No big smiles or other joyful expressions by 6 months. No back and forth sharing of sound or facial expressions by 9 months. And no babbling by 12 months. To learn more of the signs, visit autismspeaks.org.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.